This episode is brought to you by FinditNWA.com, your hyper-local business directory connecting you with the best of Northwest Arkansas. Whether you're looking for a new place to eat, a trusted service provider, or unique local shops, FinditNWA has you covered. We also highlight businesses with a featured listing on the site. That means if you're a small business owner in NWA, you could be next. Discover more at FinditNWA.com.
Support for this episode comes from Signature Bank.
Hey, this is Gary Head at Signature Bank of Arkansas. We started this bank 20 years ago to serve our communities with local decision-making and personal relationships. From Fayetteville to Jonesboro, we've grown to 210 teammates, and we're proud to serve all of our customers, including through Banco C, our bilingual banking service. Call 479-684-3700. Or visit signature.bank and tell us you heard about us on I Am Northwest Arkansas.
The oldest and strongest form of human connection happens around a table. For more than a century, Mahjong has been more than just a game. It has been a bridge between cultures, generations, and communities. And here in Northwest Arkansas, people are rediscovering its magic. Not just for the thrill of the tiles, but for the friendships and connections it fosters. Today, I'm sitting down with someone who has taken this, well, we'll call it an ancient game, and turned it into a modern movement. Shanda Sloan is not only an avid Mahjong player, but also the founder of Ozark Mahjong, an initiative dedicated to teaching, connecting, and strengthening our community, one tile at a time. Whether it's combating loneliness, building new friendships, or even creating local jobs, her vision is big and her passion is contagious. Get ready to dive into a world of strategy, tradition, and connection as we explore how Mahjong is bringing people together right here in Northwest Arkansas. Let's get started.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Today, we want to welcome Shanda Sloan to the podcast. Shanda, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me here. Your intro was fabulous and makes me a little bit teary, so thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I have to give a shout out to Teresa Cornett for making an introduction, although we did technically know each other. Our families knew each other.
Yes.
There have been some carpools in the past. As most of us know here in Northwest Arkansas, when you do sports, when you do a lot of activities, a lot of kids are involved. There's always a lot of carpools. And so
yes,
that's the one thing that I can say is this is one of the most carpooling places that I've ever met when it comes to sports and other activities.
I do love the connectedness of our community. And just again, Teresa is one of the joys of my life in the last 6 months. I don't know that I would know Teresa had it not been for Mahjong. And so I'm eternally grateful for the game just because of that friendship. So thank you, Teresa, for reintroducing me to Randy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And certainly shout out to the Fayetteville Public Library Foundation, because that's actually how I got connected with Teresa. And so, you know, so many wonderful people on that board that I used to be on. I've been known to be a serial board member. So I've been conscripted to a number of boards here in Northwest Arkansas, but that's a conversation for another day. But I'm excited to really talk about this because the thing that struck me, and for folks that don't know, when I hear about an idea or what I think is a really good story, I typically try to have a quick conversation with an individual just to learn a little bit more. And so I think I sent Shanda my calendar link and we got on a quick phone call and we just kind of talked about it. The thing that stuck with me the most, Shanda, was that you talked about just the importance of, there were two factors that you thought Mahjong could help. There's more, but these are the two that stood out to me when you first talked about it. One was loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the other was community, mm-hmm. right? And actually the two kind of, they go hand in hand, right? Because if you're struggling with loneliness, then you need community. If you have really strong and good community, then in a lot of instances, you can combat loneliness that might be in your life.
I think so. I think we live, though, in a very complicated world. And there are lots of things that have increased our loneliness. The pandemic being one of them. Some people would point to technology.
Yeah.
I think it goes back further than that. And some of that evidence comes from an article from The Atlantic called The Antisocial Century that I read recently. And there is some evidence that loneliness or an increase in loneliness really started to grow in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And some of that, they believe, was a decrease in the number of public spaces that government was investing in. So that's kind of an interesting thing from that article.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen something. I'm going to have to look that article up from The Atlantic. They do so many great articles. And hopefully if I can find that article, we will put a link to that in the show notes. I recently saw a poll that was taken that showed that the decrease, and this here, listen to this, the mm-hmm. decrease in bowling clubs has been a tremendous sign of the weakening of our social structure. And it's so funny because I don't know. I mean, we're kind of contemporaries in age, I'm sure. I grew up in the 70s. I'm a Gen Xer. And so, you know, my mom was a teacher. And every Friday afternoon, all the teachers in the Teaneck public school system would be at Feibel's Bowling Alley in a bowling league. That was a thing.
It's
like
huge.
In the 70s and 80s, that was a thing. Where was I every Friday? I was eating hot French fries at Feibel's Bowling. I would play. I would play a couple of games of bowling, but then I would just hang out. The fries were great. The camaraderie, because I would hang out with other kids who were children of teachers, and we would just hang out. And that was just a thing. And that was the social construct that existed. And nowadays, you don't have that. I mean, you do have it in some instances. Like, I guess I could say that, you know, shout out to all the parents from FC Arkansas, because my son plays travel soccer, and we are like a tight-knit community. I'm always mm-hmm. saying we are a village, right? And so if nothing else, I do communicate with those folks a lot. But it is predicated around our kids, but we need more of that. It's almost
Agreed.
Like we need more forced interventions and opportunities for people to come together. And honestly, when you talked about Mahjong and I could hear the passion in your voice through the phone, I said, you know what, we have to talk about this and figure out a way to promote what I've always been aware of the game, never played the game. Mm. And so today is going to be almost like a masterclass on, and I'm hyping it up, but it's going to be like a masterclass on Mahjong and also a little bit of a conversation around how do we get back to stronger community ties? How do we connect with people and how do we eradicate this issue of loneliness that has really become an issue at the forefront of our society?
We are from the same generation. I grew up in the 70s. I am Gen X. And I also was raised
Shout out
by,
to the latchkey kids.
I also was raised by teachers. I spent a lot of time in teachers' lounges, smoky teachers' lounges.
Listen, it's so funny when you think about that, and not to go off on a tangent, but you know, teachers are, it's always interesting to see teachers when they're not in their classroom element.
Absolutely.
And it's so funny. This is an aside, has nothing to do with it. But at the time of recording this, a couple of weeks prior, I got to go speak at an event in New York. And the person that invited me to come speak was my sixth grade teacher, her name is Miss Theodora Lacey. She's 92 years old. And I got to see her and hug her and just, it was the greatest experience ever. I'm 55, but she's 92, and she fundamentally changed my life. And it's not often that you get to go back to see some of your heroes from grade school that are still alive mm-hmm. at our age yep. where you're like, man, you know. And so it's just, it speaks volumes to the impact that teachers do have on their students.
We spend a lot, you know, I come from teachers, and I know how much they have meant in the lives of others. And my mom's no longer with us, but I hear from her students. Actually, I just finished teaching Mahjong to some of her former students in Mississippi, and it was like being with her. And how beloved she is by them and how she changed their lives. Just hearing it changes mine.
Yeah.
So yes, teachers are important. And I will tell you, my background is not in teaching. I was raised by teachers and lots of teachers in the teacher's lounge. I can name them. Janice Anderson, you are so important to my life still. I use algebra every day.
Believe it or not, I tell my kids that. So
you do, please. I love math, and I had great math teachers. I had many, many great teachers at my school, but my first teacher was my mom. And I think I told you earlier, she loved games and she played all kinds of games. She grew up on games. She was avid bridge player. I was just told when she was in sorority, that was the place that you would find her in college, is around the bridge table. And she would pick up a game with anyone who would play with her. And when we were born, my dad didn't really love games. So she had to start early with us. And one of my earliest memories is sitting on the shag carpet in our living room. I was probably 6 years old and my sister was four. And she got out a deck of cards and she taught us how to shuffle that day. And I think it felt like cards were everywhere for hours, but she taught us how to play games and taught us community and collaboration and concentration and confidence. I love all the C words.
Yeah.
But we learned math skills. We learned life through gaming. And so it was really easy to come to this, to teach this. It makes my heart happy to give something in this way, teaching a game. But it is so much more. And I think you said that earlier. It is. To some, it might seem kind of silly that we're talking this much about a game, but I think about some of the biggest memories of my life. And they were around a table and cooperating with others playing a game.
Yeah. No, there's something to be said for that. I mean, listen, they've made whole shows about games.
Uh-huh.
So let's just, one of my favorite episodes of Black-ish is a game where they talk about playing what I would call, and I'm using air quotes now, Black Monopoly, which is where, because everybody has their own rules to games and they make their own rules around things. And so, and I think we mentioned, I think you said something about spades.
I did.
Yeah. Which I was like, well, we may have to get a little game going at some point because, I would run a Boston on people from time to time. And so, we'd have to see what's going on. But I remember my grandparents playing Pinochle. And that was just, card night was a big thing. And back to that whole idea of community and not being lonely. Whenever I would visit my grandparents and God rest their souls, they've been gone a long time now. But whenever I would go down to Washington, D.C., to Northeast, to over there by Catholic University, I could remember at least twice a week they would have card night at the house and multiple couples would be over there. They might have a little something to drink, but they played Pinochle until the cows came home. And I remember that vividly. And I'm just, I'm wondering, is there going to be something like that? I know my kids seem to tell me that, hey, me playing on this video game with this headset on, playing against my cousin that's, 1,000 miles away is the same as what you were doing. But I would beg to differ on that. I think there's something about human connection and being in proximity to other people.
I think so. When I think about those things, and yes, we did talk about spades and some of the fondest memories. And I will tell you, before I started playing Mahjong, Adrian Martinez, you know this better than anyone. He's a friend of mine. And we would play spades with my husband and others for hours in college. Some of the happiest, most connected memories of my life.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so excited about having kids. And probably because I was going to get spades partners in my house.
Right.
And it has taken me 18 years to bring my youngest to spades. And she finally relented and let us teach her. And now all four of us can play when we're together. And it's the biggest joy of my life, sitting around a table playing that game until Mahjong. And now I'm full on addicted and think about very little else probably. To the people who are close, to their great chagrin, they hear a lot about Mahjong from me in their life, but I love it.
Now that's making me think I'm going to have to, because my kids, we play some games but I don't think that we have introduced. And I think even during the pandemic, we tried to introduce some new games like Ticket to Ride and some other games. But, spades is different though. It's kind of like you can be anywhere and play it for the most part. And there's just, you just need some paper and a pen and a nice steady table and you can go to town on it. I think that there are some tremendous opportunities to do that. And
you know, to maybe engage the kids. So now you've got me thinking, I'm going to see if I can indoctrinate them into the game of spades.
Well, if you need help doing that, I will come and help you indoctrinate them, as will my son and my husband.
Okay.
I do love that game. And you said something about paper. We got to a point in college that we could not find any paper. We're in college.
Yeah,
we could not find any paper in the house. And so we found a paper plate and started taking score on
you
the paper
plate.
Use
whatever magazine, back of magazine covers. Yes. It doesn't matter.
Right.
So,
but I love that game. And I think, and I wish I could communicate to all those people who played with me back in college how much I need them to drive to Fayetteville and teach them how to play this game. And this is a different time investment. And people go, really? I mean, like, you take that much time learning this game, and there's so many layers.
Yeah.
It tickles my brain in a way that not many things can, because once you peel back the layer, you know, like an onion, you peel that layer back, you find something new that just tickles your brain and you go, oh, I need to do this. And why am I doing that? And this is getting in my way and I can play defensively this way. It's a very, very interesting game that way. And I'm not an expert by any means.
Sure.
There's so many people that know more than I do. And I try to play with people I would say were experts, because we all know when we play with people who are better, we get better.
Yeah.
But I would say I'm an enthusiast and I want to learn as much as I can about everything associated with the game.
So what can you tell us about the history of the game of Mahjong in your limited understanding?
In my limited understanding.
Yes.
I will, and I'll plug a book. It's a book called Mahjong, A Chinese Game and the Making of Modern American Culture. It's by Annalise Hines. She's a professor out of Oregon. I've been told she has Chinese American history as well as Jewish ancestry. And I'll tell you, Mahjong is very important to both of those cultures. And so when I talk about the history of Mahjong, I talk a lot about its origins, where it came from. It's deeply rooted now in the U.S., but it came from China. And, you know, a limited what I know and what I know from this book is a gentleman named Joseph Babcock in the 1920s was living in China. He was working for Standard Oil. He lived there with his wife, Norma. And in many circles in Shanghai, there were games, this game, Mahjong, that was being played. And you mentioned earlier in the beginning that it's a centuries or a century old game. A lot of people believe or say that it's an ancient game, and it actually isn't. Earliest evidence of Mahjong is from the 1870s. That's when the first tiles, like the one that they could find, and writings on it from that time. And interestingly enough, the idea that it was an ancient game came from people like Joseph Babcock when they brought it over in the 1920s to America. They used that as a marketing technique. It increased kind of the mysticism. And there was already this huge interest in things from Asia. There were Orientalists in the U.S. who loved lots of things that were coming from that area and enjoyed those things. And from a marketing standpoint, to sell more things, stories like, this is the game of 1,000 intelligence, the ancient game from 1,000 years ago. Confucius gave us this game. And actually, it seems to be, from Professor Hines' work, to be a bit of a misconception and a purposeful one from American marketers who wanted to sell more games to people in the U.S. So it's probably no more than 150 years old. It's a fascinating game. In China, what they say, or what is commonly known or believed, and this is mentioned in Professor Hines' book, they believe that an academic, a Chinese academic, invented the game probably in the late 1870s and sold it for a profit. Mm. And it started showing up in urban centers, Shanghai being one of the most prominent, but in other places. And Mahjong, and the Mahjong that I play, is largely American Mahjong, which is an offshoot of Chinese Mahjong. When Babcock brought it over here, he changed it significantly, and he actually changed the spelling, and you'll see it several different ways in the U, or spelled several different ways in the U.S. When we see it Mahjong all together, that's largely an umbrella for what I know to be at least 21 versions of the game. Even in China, you have different ways of playing dependent upon your regionality. One of those 21 versions is the American version. So it came over here in 1923. Joseph Babcock brought it over. He built factories in China and began importing sets, When it got here, it was largely like the Chinese game, but he changed it because he didn't believe that Americans could deal with some of the complexities of those games. Well, fast forward almost 88 years later, and some believe that it's gotten increasingly more complicated because of our intervention. But it is a fascinating game and different because it was a set of rules Babcock wrote down. He had this book of, it was called the Red Book of Rules. But what happened is people started all over the country, just like in China, playing different versions. And this was somewhat irritating to folks. And it was adopted, beautifully adopted, by the Jewish community and Jewish women in particular. And they have stewarded the game very well for the last 88 years. And it means very much and is deeply rooted in the American Jewish community. But in 1937, Babcock and a group of Jewish women came together to form what is now known as the National Mahjong League. It is a nonprofit agency, and every year they produce what's called the National Mahjong League card. And it's a group of anywhere 60, 70 hands that in that calendar year will be acceptable to play when you are playing Mahjong or American Mahjong with your friends. It is very unique because in China, the hands that win are the hands that win. But in American Mahjong, it changes yearly, and it's almost like a resetting for everyone that plays. You have new hands that you have to learn, and it is an abundance of hands, and they can be made in many, many different permutations. You kind of have to learn how to decode the card. And right now, we are waiting anxiously for the 88th card or the 88th National Mahjong League card to be released. And I feel like it's Mahjong Christmas. Everyone's very excited about this. So when you turn a new card, we're all doing new learning. And everyone, not everyone, but it levels the playing field for everyone a bit. So that's kind of a brief history. The National Mahjong League gives a lot of the money that they make selling their cards each year to charity. What they don't pay in admin expenses is paid to charities or donated to charities like the Alzheimer's Foundation is one of their big ones. And they do a lot of great work in community. And I would also tell people, if you are purchasing cards anywhere, the only place to get an official National Mahjong League card is from the league and from their website. And then most of your dollars are going to go back into community doing good work.
What does a card cost?
A card, like a regular print card, which the youngins can read very well, costs you about $14. And okay. Then a large print card, which is what Gen Xers like myself like to use right now, costs about $15. So okay. It's not expensive. You're buying one. Some people buy a few more just to have around the table.
Sure.
But not an expensive investment. And actually the game, I mean, it can be really expensive or it cannot.
Not be.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, and so my initial memory of Mahjong, I grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey, which many people on the podcast have heard me talk about. It was historically had a large Jewish population, both Hasidic Jews, Orthodox Jews, as well as just normal American Jews. And what I learned is that going to some of my friends' homes, their mothers would be playing Mahjong. And I was like, what is this? You know, what is this game? And they'd be moving the tiles around and doing all this stuff. And, you know, I always thought it was interesting. And I never got into it, but I was aware of it. And then, of course, Mahjong was famously featured on an episode of Seinfeld where George Costanza's mother was playing Mahjong. And then there were some other, there have been other cultural references to Mahjong, but I just never got around to like, okay, I bite. Let me learn a little bit more about it. But now you have piqued my interest. And then you speak to one issue, you know, like some of the money goes to the American Alzheimer's Society. And, you know, there are some significant cognitive benefits to playing Mahjong.
Absolutely. And I mentioned this earlier, there are layers to this game. And I've talked to so many women that have been playing for 30, 40, 50 years. It was passed down from their mothers. Again, it's huge in Jewish community. They need fewer instructors because women pass this on to other women, and it means so much to them. And what the game does over years, once you get through the fundamentals, other things begin to kind of pop up into your brain. New pathways are made. It challenges you differently. The card changing every year is a unique challenge among all the types of Mahjong that you could play. It pushes your brain in a way that it might not otherwise be pushed. Some people have said, and there is some research around this, that even if dementia or Alzheimer's surfaces, some of those symptoms might be dampened by lots of, and not just Mahjong. I mean, any type of strategy game that keeps you engaged. Of course, we don't know whether that's causal or correlated, but I do believe it is engaging the brain in different ways and challenging it in different ways. I've seen videos of women who are playing into their hundreds, and they play weekly, and they all credit this to playing. Keeping not only you mentioned Pinochle and other games, I think some of it probably has to do with the social benefits and staying in community and preventing that loneliness. We know that games like Mahjong and Spades and others bring people together. And I think when people fight off that loneliness and do the face-to-face interaction, and we're social animals. This is part of our being. We need one another. Social psychology tells us that we need each other in community. And for lots of reasons, and some good and some bad, we've pushed people into loneliness. And I think it's harder for them to move out of that. I think people sometimes feel uncomfortable venturing out. And I don't even think that's just the pandemic. I think we're learning things about ourselves and how we want to be in the social world.
Yeah.
Things that perhaps in the past haven't served us well. I told a story the other day. I think as a woman who kind of gets wound up having people in my home, this is a reflection of me. Society has told me my home is a reflection of me. It needs to be clean, needs to be tidy all the time. Everything has to be perfect when you invite people into your home. And I think the pandemic taught us that, maybe I don't have to do it that way anymore.
Right.
And I think people are like, they're doing or maybe doing that less. And so for me, I invite people regularly to come into my home to play Mahjong and to be with me. And I've thrown off a lot of this house has to be perfect. I tell people you get about 10 minutes in my house being a guest and you can see exactly how we live on a daily basis. But I want you here and I don't want anything to prevent these social interactions that I'm having and these new friends that I'm making. So I think some of those things have kept us or prevented us from socializing more in the world. I'm glad to see those changes.
Yeah, it's a tremendous crutch that we use where we're like, oh, the place has to be perfect or I got to paint or whatever. It's like, people don't really care. After a while, it's like, we all have imperfections in our homes and elsewhere. And so I think it's you bring up a really good point that we use these as excuses to avoid having to engage with people at that social level. And it's tough sometimes.
You know, there are lots of lingering questions for me as to why those things are happening. You've only to look at TikTok and see some of the funny videos about when people cancel plans, like people get really excited and they snuggle up on the couch and they're alone again. We have rising instance diagnosis of depression and anxiety. And most people will tell you it is, next to obesity, or actually sometimes even before obesity and alcoholism and those things, this turning into ourselves is becoming a bigger social problem. I do believe we're set to be the anti-social century or the next century is.
Yeah.
But I do believe that, some of the things that we're doing, and especially in Fayetteville, and especially I do love the Mahjong, I think can stave off that. They can be an antidote to some of the fears that have created some anxiety around social interaction.
Well, and Jonathan Haidt in his book talked about it quite a bit. And it does. There are variations of it that impact the different sexes differently.
Agreed.
And so I think that's interesting because I've heard others talk about how young men nowadays struggle with loneliness. And that is a real issue. And, again, I don't want to get too far deep into the weeds from that perspective. But the idea and the concept here is how do we spark or encourage engagement from a social perspective? And certainly Mahjong is one way to do that.
I think so. One of the things that I've observed when I teach people, and one of my favorite things to do is actually just do guided play or be a fifth player that is just watching the game and seeing the decisions that people are making around their hands. I almost sometimes love that more than even playing. But one of the things that I've observed is introverts, extroverts, wherever you land out, they get what they need from the game. Mahjong's interesting, and most people will tell you there is talk at the beginning of the game when you're setting it up. Lots of back and forth, lots of networking, lots of checking in, book recommendations, you know, news of the day, worries, concerns, talking about our kids, music that we like. But then the game grows quiet when concentration is needed. And then that goes on for a little bit of time. So there's a break. And what I see is the introverts get what they need at the table. It's quiet time. They can pull their social interaction and what they're comfortable with. And then extroverts sometimes will carry the conversation and they'll be the movers and shakers. But that's okay with the introverts. And so everyone, I feel like, wherever you land on the spectrum of neurodivergence, gets what they need out of this game. And I would posit that it's almost any strategy-based game. I tell my students when I leave a lesson, I'm like, if it's not this game, do this for yourself. Make an appointment with the people that you want to see more of weekly, and then do something around a table together. I think games are easy, any kind of game that you love. Spades makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It's the appointment to viewing. Visit each other's homes at whatever state they are. Sit around a table. And then, you know, in the last 8 months, I have met people I would not come in contact with otherwise because of this game. Bring new people into your life. I'm an empty nester. I'm in a unique stage in my life. This is a huge transition. And normally what we find here is we don't make new friends after our children lead us to friendships that are enduring, but then that stops once they go out and venture into the world. This game alone, what I'm doing for my own self, has created a whole new world and an opportunity for me to connect with others.
Yeah. So you actually met Teresa through Mahjong.
Well, that's a long story. I mean, her daughter happened to live in our neighborhood. My husband worked for Teresa's husband when we first moved to Northwest Arkansas, but I had not met Teresa.
Okay.
And then Kara actually sat down at a neighborhood Mahjong game that I had at my house. And we began talking. And I said, actually to her friend that she'd brought, I said, Taylor, are you Teresa and Alex's daughter? And Kara goes, no, but I am. And then Kara made an introduction. She said, I think you'd like my mom a lot. And so.
Oh, very nice.
And she was not wrong. I do very much.
Very good. Very good. I love that. Well, so obviously the game does bring together people from diverse backgrounds, or it has the potential to do that. And I think that's kind of one of your hopes, right? In sparking this kind of movement for Mahjong here in Northwest Arkansas.
I am purposely in community talk about this as much as I can, especially in, well, really anyone who will listen, because it is my hope, not only for myself, is that I get to meet people from diverse backgrounds. And then I get to introduce them to others. One of the things my friends hear me say a lot is make the circle bigger. And I have a beautiful circle of friends, but my goal is to always open our arms and create a bigger circle. And if they aren't connected to the person they stand next to, I feel like it's my job to find their people maybe across the circle. And I don't ever want to get to a point in my life that I'm not making my circle bigger and bigger and encouraging others to do the same.
Yeah, I love that.
It's hard to sit across the table and enjoy something you love together and perpetuate any bias.
Yeah.
And when you love and share something, there's a bond that's created. And my hope is that we can put different people around the table together, and that we can increase how much we talk and enjoy each other's company and grow each other's empathy and compassion.
So you're launching Ozark Mahjong. Can you tell us a bit about your vision for this particular initiative as you're starting to grow this? I mean, you're teaching it privately. You're about to do, at the time of recording this, you're actually going to do a class at the Fayetteville Public Library. What is your hope for launching this Ozark Mahjong?
This has been a unique journey. When I started and how this started, as I mentioned, my mom was an avid gamer. And in the last few years of her life, she was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And she popped up and told my sister and I, this is a bucket list thing. I want to learn this game. And we said, okay. And I will tell you, I'm not the one to adopt yet. Show me something new.
Yeah.
And it was, we sat around the table. We enjoyed other games and this game for the remainder of her life. And so it became special to us. After that time, a grief set over me, and I probably couldn't even call it that at the time. I didn't know what it was, but I feel like I folded into myself. And there weren't a whole lot of people to play with, play really any games. We were in the middle of COVID when she passed away. So, you know, I think the world took on a darker, or was darker for me. And what happened, a friend of mine popped up and said, hey, there's a Mahjong group playing. You want to come with me tonight? And I sat down and I said, I don't remember a lot. And we started playing and I started remembering more. And then we had an area teacher come in and do a refresher for a smaller group. And that's all it took.
Yeah.
And I went head down. My goal and what I got from it is I feel like I reawakened. I rejoined the world a bit. I connected to people that I hadn't had access to before. I feel happier. You know, I talk about the spades time. That was some of a very, it was a happy, happy time and a connected time. And I feel like I've regained some of that at a time in my life that I didn't expect it. And so I want to offer that to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I am teaching privately, but it is important with anything that I do that I invest in community. You mentioned our Fayetteville Public Library, a resource we are very lucky to have in a beautiful public space. They've offered.
It's the first thing that I take people to when they come to visit.
Me too.
I'm like, listen, I want to show you my library. And they're like, library? And I'm like, listen, don't knock it until you've seen it. Then when they've seen it, they're like, oh, I understand.
So. It's stunning. It is a showplace of community. And what they have done and what they offer us in community is just special. It's unique. It's one of the things I love about Fayetteville. And they offered us some time. We're teaching 16 folks there. It will be a two-part lesson. Normally, I do fundamentals over a three-hour period privately, but we're going to teach a larger group. And I could not be more excited. Teresa's going to help me. She better help me when we do it. And my goal is that we at least offer this in community two times. And if we can grow the number of people that we teach with this game, concentration's important. And sometimes when we're in louder spaces, it gets hard and gets overwhelming the more people. But I think we can mitigate that and we can teach more people because my ultimate goal is that we play a lot in Fayetteville. And how could we even grow this to having tournaments here? Because that's the thing that isn't visible to a lot of folks. But in places like New York, in Florida, the Carolinas, in Dallas or Texas, they have tournaments, huge tournaments, and people are playing. And it brings a lot of people into community. So there's a huge upside because who doesn't want to come here?
I mean, I know.
This is a great place.
I know. You know, and it's funny, as you were mentioning that, I seem to remember when I lived in the Bay Area for about 6 years. So my office was in San Francisco, and I used to spend a lot of time in Chinatown. I believe they had Mahjong parlors to play Mahjong, and they would be crowded. Like, you'd roll by there on a Friday night, and it was packed. There were a lot of people playing.
Well, that would be a big dream of mine as well. I've talked to a number of folks. I would love to have a parlor here.
Yeah.
Office here where you can pop in and play any time of day. I would love to build a culture where there are sets almost in every public space that you go and have enough people here that they can play anywhere.
Yeah.
This game offers a two-person version, a three-person version, a four-person. You can even play five people. So if you can play, you can really play anywhere and make lots of friends that way. I know Theater Squared is going to have some sets that they offer the public. Fayetteville Public Library said they're going to offer some sets. I'm going to talk ONF into it as well, hopefully,
just
if you're listening.
Just say the word. Yeah, for sure.
And maybe it's through fundraising just to get those sets in and paid for so that we can have them everywhere. But I'd love to make Northwest Arkansas a Mahjong hub, and I think it's doable.
So let me ask you this, because I know that if historically when people have seen folks playing Mahjong, it's primarily women.
It is.
How do you get guys involved with it? And have you seen guys playing Mahjong?
I've taught guys, and it's so fun to teach guys. It really is. I will tell you, and I just have found this out from reading more and more about the history of Mahjong, it's still the most widely game played in China. And the interesting thing is it's not a gendered game in China at all. It's played across genders.
Okay.
And here, though, and I think it's alluded to in the book, there was a feminization of Mahjong and many Asian things when they were brought over here in the 1920s. It competed with bridge. And we know bridge was a leisure activity, largely of women. Men played it, too. They competed a bit in the 1920s. There's some interesting stories around that and how those two kind of locked heads.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is it's not a feminine game, but for marketing reasons, the men that brought it over here found utility in marketing it as a female game. We also know that leisure time in general and how it was defined in that time, how women used it and how men used it, were very different. It's weird to me that poker is like valid for guys to play,
right?
But maybe not bridge or mahjong. But what I'll tell you, and mahjong has a gambling component to it, always has. It was outlawed in China for a while and a bit taboo here as well. But I've played poker, and I actually think mahjong is a little bit more mentally stimulating, a little bit more difficult to play. There are some mahjong players seasoned who would tell you, it's not gambling. I'm getting paid for a mahjong, and this is skill, not luck. And they're not completely wrong. I would probably take a bit of issue with that. But back to your question about men and mahjong. I've taught men. It's a different experience to teach a group of men than it is a group of women. But they learn it just as fast and are fascinated with it just as much. I will tell you, not a little known secret, but I have different sets, and there are a number of sets that are being used in the U.S. right now. Mm-hmm. I have a lovely set from a company called Modern Mahjong. That's a very traditional one, but updated, a little bit more modern. And it seems to be less alienating to men when I take my black and white set versus my pink flowery lavender set. So I try to set up the environment so that it's a little bit more palatable to men. And that seems to help. But they take to it just like women. So I'm on a one-woman mission to ruin this whole, this is a female's game.
Right, because it
definitely isn't.
Okay. And so as we wrap up, I'm curious to know, what has been the response across the spectrum in the community for Mahjong that you've had in terms of just interacting with folks? What are people saying to you? Like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for. This is the bee's knees. I mean, what are you hearing from people?
I think...
What's word on the street?
Word on the street. One, you know, we know, and I tell people, it's huge in Texas right now. And it's had a resurgence in Texas. People are asking why right now.
Everything's big in Texas.
Yes, it's very big in Texas. It's going to be big in Arkansas and bigger and better, promise you.
Okay.
We're going to do it right.
Right. Okay.
I think one of the main things, and people are like, oh, I've heard it's a very difficult game. You know, I probably wouldn't use the word difficult. I think it is a complex game, but I'll say it again. It tickles your brain in a way and your curiosity in a way that's unique. It's a sensory game. A lot of people will talk about the tiles and what it sounds like when they move. And just a little side, little trivia. Mahjong, and I cannot confirm this with a Chinese-speaking person, and if you have anyone in your listening audience who can confirm this, I've been told mahjong loosely translates to hemp bird cackling or sparrows cackling.
Okay.
And when we move the tiles together, which is very pleasing from a sensory standpoint, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like sparrows or birds cackling. That's another thing that the game brings that other games do not. There is this sensory experience. I tell a lot of people, playing mahjong is very ritualistic. It's a little bit like line dancing. You know, if you're going down to the club and you don't know the music, and then all of a sudden you're learning the steps and you're moving in rhythm and time with people, it feels good. It's a little bit like singing hymns in church.
Right.
It has that, I don't know, it just does something to you. And mahjong does that. Those are some of the things I'm hearing. The difficult nature of it is there. But what I tell people is it's a complex game and it opens up this learning window. And I think, especially as Americans, what I feel like a learning window is, it's the opportunity to be frustrated and to sit in our frustration and work through it. Frustration's really good. And I think it's especially good for minds like mine that are, quote unquote, more mature.
Yep.
That struggle. And me sitting with that struggle and being resilient through learning something, it's rewarding in ways that I can't even quantify. When you push through, that's what I'm hearing from most people. They fall in love after that first 3-hour period.
Yeah.
Yes, it's complicated. And they have to keep playing to solidify what they learn. But once they do, there's this full on, it's like you're line dancing all the time with new people and moving in community. I'm hearing a lot. I got a text from a beloved new friend who, after we played last weekend, she said, thank you. I just spent 3 hours off of my phone I didn't doom scroll or be, I wasn't sad for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it made me feel good. And I think if anything else, I want to hear more of that. I want to feel more of that. So I think overwhelmingly, and it's why it makes me so happy, I think that's what I'm getting from folks.
I love that. So for anyone listening that's now fully sold on Mahjong, how can they get involved?
They can email me at hello, H-E-L-L-O, at Mahjong, and that is spelled MAHJONGG.com. They can email me directly there, or they can visit our website, which is Ozark Mahjong, again, MAHJONGG.com. We'll have lessons there and ways to get involved. We are, as I said, trying to offer it in community at least two times a year at the Fayetteville Public Library free of charge. And I really do. I love teaching, and I'm going to push that. You know, that's part of my business. But I will tell you, if you have a beloved friend that knows and plays well and plays National Mahjong League rules, have them teach you. If they can give you some of their time, if it's a seasoned player who has been playing for a while, sit down if they'll teach you. It just takes a little bit longer. It is an investment, but I promise you, it's worth it.
It's worth it. Yeah. That's interesting. And I would imagine that as more and more assisted living facilities crop up, and, you know, I'm thinking of places like Butterfield and some others where, you know, you've got kind of like a growing group of people. There's all kinds of opportunities to introduce the game, if not reintroduce the game to some folks that maybe had in a former life played Mahjong.
Well, I've been hearing tale over at Butterfield Trail that there are some big and raucous games that go on over there.
Okay.
And I have literally tried to break into that facility to play with those folks because they've been playing for a long time, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
I think what we are seeing, and this is really interesting, Gen Z and millennials are coming to gameplay. I think they are putting their phones down. There's some evidence for seeing upswings in the purchases of board games. They are organizing more in-person things. I think they do feel the effects of too much technology use.
Yeah.
So it's not just who you think traditionally is playing games. There are huge opportunities among all people. I think we can teach our kids, and I do. I've already wrestled mine into learning, and they're interested. So that's gratifying. We've got a lot of opportunity here, not just for this game. There are different ways to come together in community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest lesson learned by this uptick in interest in the game is maybe it's not just Mahjong. Maybe it's that we crave one-on-one time with one another.
Human interaction.
But, you know, and I do, like, I have lots of neurodivergent friends, and I do get social anxiety. I do. How do we, as in community, help those folks? How do we pull people of all different backgrounds? And I mean, if social anxiety is a thing for you, how do we pull people into the social interaction that they need? How do we come back together? I think we learned a lot from the pandemic. I think we learned a lot about ourselves that I think makes us better, but we shouldn't fold in to ourselves. The solace that we get from our alone time, I think, is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But just the day-to-day interaction, I mean, we see it. You know, the loss of that interaction and how we deal with one another politically and how we see ourselves.
That's an understatement.
Yes.
That's an understatement.
This is my little hope is, you know, that we can, through something as innocuous as a game, come back together, sit with one another, and learn to be in each other's presence and learn from one another, even when that might make us a little uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, proximity is power.
I agree.
It really is.
Yes.
So,
and I also, this is something fun I also say too, having fun is fuel.
Yeah.
It is. It's necessary. It isn't frivolous. Fun is not frivolous. Bring more fun into your life, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think maybe we've lost a bit of the importance of that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree 100%. She is Shanda Sloan, the founder of Ozark Mahjong, and I think she's going to be very, very busy this season coming up and into the future, introducing more of Northwest Arkansas to this game. Shanda, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you for giving me the time.
Absolutely.
I've enjoyed myself.
For sure, for sure. Well, folks, remember, if you want to learn more about what Shanda is doing with Ozark Mahjong, visit our website, iamnorthwestarkansas.com. You can check out these show notes. We'll put links to everything she mentioned on this particular episode in those show notes so you can make sure that you reach out to her. The email address is hello@ozarkmahjong.com. So I want to encourage you to reach out, let her know that you heard it here first on the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast, and tell her that you'd like to come down and play a game with her. So I think that would be really cool and she would appreciate it. So
I love it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. Another episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. To learn about all things here in Northwest Arkansas, the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life, check us out online at iamnorthwestarkansas.com. Remember, you can rate and review our show on all of the major podcasting platforms, especially Apple Podcasts, where we would love for you to give us a rating and a review. Let us know what you think about the podcast. We read all of the reviews. Lastly, remember, our podcast comes out every Monday, rain or shine. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and we'll see you back here next week for another new episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit IAMNorthwestArkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.